The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our show today. I've got author Carla McLaren with me today, and we'll be talking about her book, The Art of Empathy, A Complete Guide to Life's Most Essential Skill. And I will tell you that this is a complete guide. It's a very thorough examination of empathy, such a well-written book. I think we owe a debt of gratitude to Carla for her work. She says on the back of her book, "What if there were a single skill that could directly and radically improve your relationships in your life? I've often wondered about the role that empathy might play in the development of a society seriously dedicated to peace." So that quote might say, "What if there were a single skill that could directly or radically improve our willingness to work for peace or our success at that endeavor? You know, we may or may not ever achieve a society such as this. But I believe that the development of empathy will, as Carlos suggests, directly and radically improve your relationships in your life. And that can only help us create a peaceful society." So as you know, at Bread for the Journey, we are dedicated to generosity. Our vision at Bread for the Journey, the nonprofit organization, is to nurture the seed of generosity in every human heart. And the reason I chose Carla as a guest on our show is that empathy is very much alive in the process of philanthropy. In fact, the word of philanthropy means love of humankind. So as I see it, empathy and generosity walk hand in hand. And because of that, her book caught my attention, and I reached out and asked if she would be on the show, and she so graciously said yes. So I've got Carla waiting by, so let's get started to asking her some questions. First, let me introduce you to her through her biography. Carla is an award-winning author, social science researcher, and pioneering educator whose empathic approach to emotions revalues even the most negative emotions and opens startling new pathways into the depths of the soul. She's the author, as I have said, of this book we're going to talk about today, The Art of Empathy, A Complete Guide to Life's Most Essential Skill. She's also the author of The Language of Emotions, which was published in 2010, and the multimedia online course, Emotional Flow. Carla has taught at such venues as the University of San Francisco, Omega Institute, Nairobi University, Kripalu Center, and the Association for Humanistic Psychology. Also, as a prison arts educator with the William James Foundation, she has utilized singing, drumming, and drama to help men in maximum security prisons explore and heal long-held emotional traumas. Carla is also a certified human resource administrator and a certified career development facilitator who helps people identify the emotion work, and we'll be talking more about that today, the emotion work that they're expected to perform or expect others to perform, perhaps without realizing it. When emotion work is brought out into the open and managed skillfully, she says, individuals and businesses can avoid unnecessary conflict, burnout, and loss of productivity. Welcome, Carla. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Great. So in our first segment, we're going to explore really what empathy is and what it isn't. So I'm thinking perhaps we could start by having you give us a definition, your working definition of what empathy is.
That is a really good question. That was one of the first things that I worked on as I prepared my research for the book, because there were so many competing definitions. I finally got it organized after much reading into this. Empathy is a social and emotional skill that helps us feel and understand the emotions, circumstances, intentions, thoughts, and needs of others, such that we can offer sensitive, perceptive, and appropriate communication and support.
So the thing that jumps out at me, I mean, much in that definition jumps out at me, but the thing I would like to highlight actually is that it's a skill, and that what I learned in your book is that it's a skill that can be developed. And actually just even reading the material in your book is helpful in the development of that skill. A lot of it is just becoming awake and aware. Would you agree?
Yeah, because empathy, like emotions, is sort of pushed off to the side. People spend a lot of time focusing on, you know, sort of logic and making sense of things. And a lot of the intelligence that we have about emotions and empathy is sort of hidden from us below language. And so what I did with this book is to bring it into language and really start to articulate what the different areas of empathy are, so that if people have trouble with empathy, they can say, oh, I'm really good with this part, but here's where I'm having difficulty. Or if they have too much empathy and they're just overwhelmed, then we can look at them in terms of, okay, you've got to work on this area because this area over here is really, really strong in you. You know, instead of just saying, let's just empathize with each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've been doing in my own life personal growth work for many years. It was so helpful to have those kind of distinctions throughout the book to help me understand and to know, just as you just said, development of empathy isn't just about becoming more empathic. Sometimes it's about becoming less or regulating really the passage of what's yours, what's mine, how do I understand this situation, and then of course what do I do,
right? Yeah, and I think a lot of us growing up, especially women, are expected to be empathic. Men are expected to be less so. And there is no difference, you know, sort of neurologically or in reality. There's no difference between the capacities of men and women to be empathic. It is a normal human skill. But because we're socialized, for women to treat empathy as if it's a part of our birthright and for men to treat empathy as if it isn't, you see a lot of women and men in empathic burnout. Women because it's supposed to be normal for them and they're not supposed to complain. Men because they're not supposed to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, you know, so right. You see a lot of trouble around empathy simply because we're not able to say, this is what it is and this is when I'm doing it.
How is it that you even became interested in this subject, Carla?
It was self-preservation and survival.
Right. Right.
I come from a musical and artistic family, and those are very aspects of empathic skill. So I'm naturally empathic, but I also experienced extended childhood trauma during the very formative years of between sort of 2.5 and 5, and that sort of ramped me up into hyper empathy because I needed to be hyper aware of what was going on in my surroundings so that I wouldn't get too hurt. And so I ended up being hyper empathic, wildly so. And to the extent that I couldn't really tell when I would go into a room whose emotions I was feeling or what my own were. I learned to dissociate. I was a very, you know, split apart little person dealing with a tremendous amount of input that I didn't know how to manage.
So understanding it intellectually at first, kind of researching it, helped you begin to regulate your own emotions and become what they are supposed to call emotionally intelligent. Often we see the word empathy and the word compassion used interchangeably. Can they be, or if not, what's the difference between the two?
They are very similar. Compassion has more of a tradition from the different religious traditions. Compassion has more of a you know, of an action. Well, Buddhism talks a great deal about compassion.
Right.
Excuse me. So does actually most of the major religious talk about compassion instead of empathy, which is probably because empathy came into our language so late comparatively. It came into the English language in 1909. Empathy. There's also some conflict in the research about empathy, whether we can call empathy and compassion the same thing. For some researchers, empathy is merely and only the sharing of emotion one to the other, whereas compassion is more of an action that is a latter stage. It begins with empathy and ends with compassion, right?
Right.
But some researchers are saying, no, we have to put the compassionate act into the entire definition of empathy, because if people are just able to share emotions, they can easily get overwhelmed and shut down and not be empathic and compassionate, if you hear what I'm saying.
Right. So yeah. What do you think about that in terms of your definition of empathy?
I agree. I agree with the researchers who are saying we cannot call it empathy until that compassionate act or behavior is awake in the person, because before that they are sort of undefined empaths. They are not fully skilled yet.
So I think as we go on with this interview and as we talk about the six essential aspects of empathy, this subject, this particular thing about action, is going to become more and more clear. I could ask you more questions now, but I think I'll stay with just what we've said, lay that foundation, and go on. I want to ask you how empathy is different than something like niceness.
I think a lot of times empathy is thought of as niceness, where if you agree with me and you share my references and you don't question me, that's empathic, right? Here's the problem. If you know me long enough and I am doing a behavior that you have gotten hip to, that maybe when it's time for me to be angry and set some boundaries, I whine. Or maybe when I'm really offended, I cry to you and I don't ever go and deal with the other person. Now, it's going to be empathic for you to listen to me, but after a while, it is going to be more empathic for you to challenge me on those behaviors, because you know me well enough to know that I am not as successful in the social world as I need to be. Right?
Exactly.
So you may need to call me out. That doesn't feel nice. Do you know what I mean? On either.
I do.
But if you care about my survival and you care about my success, you've got to call me out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And what we learn in life is how to do that in a way that is spoken so that it's less threatening than more threatening.
Yes. Yes, and that's another empathic part of it, is how do I speak to this issue, you know, that Carla is stuck in this behavior that doesn't work for her, but it's all she knows.
Uh-huh.
So how do we help Carla figure this out?
Right.
But it's not nice.
Right. It's a little difficult.
Yeah.
Is empathy misunderstood by most people, do you think?
I would say yes. Because there's that gender split that men are not empathic. That's not true. Mm-hmm. There's the niceness confusion.
Right.
I'm on Facebook with a lot of very activist people, and we get into it and we start laughing and swearing and just being just funny and silly. And someone said to me, well, you can't possibly be an empath because you swear.
Now that's a misunderstanding of empathy.
So the idea is that to be an empath or to be highly empathic, you've got to sort of not even be a person, mm-hmm. right? You don't have your own opinions. You don't have intense emotion. And that's actually the opposite of the truth.
Right.
Most empaths I know are intensely emotive and engaged. And sometimes they blow up and go off on tangents, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of confusion about empathy, I think, and it makes it hard for people to approach empathy with anything like equanimity, because it just feels like a problematic area in general.
Yeah, it kind of requires that you learn a lot about your emotional landscape and other people's emotional landscape and how to separate them, how to separate what the emotions are themselves, and then how to separate mine from yours.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. There's a discernment that is, and getting back to the first comment that I made in the beginning, that is a skill.
Yes.
That one develops over time.
Yes. And for me, empathy is primarily, I think it's first and foremost, an emotional skill.
Right.
And if a person doesn't have a good relationship to emotions or doesn't have any practice for emotions, it can't regulate them, then being highly empathic is just going to be chaotic, miserable.
Right. I can imagine. It's just like too much information. Too much information.
Yeah, that's enough. That's enough emotion for me.
That's right. Well, believe it or not, our first section, our first segment of the show has passed, so we have to take time for a break. To our listening audience, stay with us. We're just getting started talking to Carla McLaren in her book, The Art of Empathy. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Tired of lackluster results with your marketing? Craving more leads in your business? Tune into the Mojo Marketing Edge with the team behind Mojo Global Marketing, Ira Rosen and Corey Michael Sanchez. Winners of the Marketer of the Year, they will show you how to generate daily leads, build databases of raving fans, and close deals faster than ever before. See what's hot right now and how you can tap into it to generate an endless supply of customers and clients. The Mojo Marketing Edge can be heard every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. In today's society, there is just too much competition. Women are taking on the same roles as men. They're working side by side, competing for the same positions. What is happening? This is transferring to how men and women feel about each other and relationships. We're delaying marriages or not even getting married at all. It's time to go back to basics. Listen for this groundbreaking show with host Naftali Schwartz. But it's not really that groundbreaking. It's just a new way of looking at things. Tune in Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety. Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Carla McLaren about her book, The Art of Empathy, A Complete Guide to Life's Most Essential Skill. So we've got two segments left to the interview, and in part two, I want to talk about the first three of six essential aspects of empathy. We're going to our listeners, you're going to get an opportunity to really help break down, take advantage of Carla's research and understand empathy by breaking it down into six categories that are going to just really clarify for you what it means to be a person who is empathic. And the first one of these six is called emotion contagion. Can you tell us what you mean by that, Carla? So contagion kind of implies catching something, and catching something that you're generally unaware of. You know, we catch, you know, somebody's cold or whatever. So emotion contagion, what is it?
The term emotion contagion comes from the from the research literature, and it is both an awful phrase and a lovely one at the same time. Emotion contagion is something that we actually delight in and we love when the emotion is something we've agreed to be contagious with. So when we laugh together, when we go to movies and see a really good actor who helps us feel, we are engaging in intentional emotion contagion. And it is one of the things that humans love to do most. But when an emotion is something we haven't agreed to feel or we don't know how to work with, say someone is really anxious around you and starts ramping up and you get anxious too, that's emotion contagion. But if you don't know how to work with anxiety, that can be a really difficult situation of emotion contagion. But the fact of emotion contagion is just a normal everyday thing that is a feature of human nature and of animal nature as well. I put emotion contagion first in the six aspects of empathy because it's what needs to happen first for us to understand that there's an emotion in the room or there's some emotion or behavior that's expected of us. We have to be able to identify what is going on and that we have to be able to pick up emotion from others and do so skillfully.
You know, you say in the book that emotion contagion is difficult for most people, but why?
I think because in general, and I wrote about this in my previous book, The Language of Emotions, in general, we are not taught how to work with emotions, how to approach them, how to deal with them, and how to function in their presence. We sort of catch our emotional education on the fly in the shadows, underneath our awareness. And so even though we love emotion contagion, we also hate it. And we want to say that we don't have to feel alongside others. We want to say that we're in charge of our emotions. And the emotions say, really, pal? Mm-hmm. Really? Mm-hmm. I don't think you are. So emotion contagion is, I think, where a lot of people have trouble with empathy. When someone, for instance, is having an emotion that we don't agree with or we don't like or we don't know how to work with, we'll shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We'll be like, no, you just became a non-person to me.
Mm-hmm.
So the empathy stops right there.
Are some people more contagious than others? Mm-hmm. And so really what I mean to say is, are there some people whose antenna is more tuned to other people's emotions, mm-hmm, than, mm-hmm, other people? Can you give me some examples?
Well, I would say people who like me as a child, who are hyper empaths, who pick up a great deal from other people, would be more skillful in the area of emotion contagion. There are also people who are very skillful at sending emotion. This would be singers, artists, actors, certainly. If you can't convey emotion through your art, it's hard for people to figure out what you're doing. You know, it's something that is a skill. People who are very good at emotion contagion on the receptive side, interviewers, therapists, anybody who listens, and sociologists, anthropologists, anybody who studies and watches and is a careful observer of human nature.
Of course, we develop it over time, and some people, it's their job to develop it, and other people, it's just they want to know how the world works. I guess my question was really about, are we born, and I think the answer is not, are we born in, are all things equal when we come into this world when it comes to emotion, when it comes to perceiving other people's emotions, and feeling what they feel?
I don't think so. I don't think it's equal. I think there's a range, because there's a condition called alexithymia, which is the inability to read emotion or totally understand emotion. So there are gradations of this ability.
Right.
And of course, early development is crucial to a child developing emotional awareness skills.
And you gave the perfect example of experiencing trauma at an early age, and what happens? We become hyper attentive, right? Because it's dangerous, and we need to protect and take care of ourselves. So the second of these six essential aspects of empathy is empathic accuracy. And it seems like it's clear, but why don't you tell us what you mean by that, Carla?
Empathic accuracy is a phrase that also came from the research literature, and it basically means when you have picked up an emotion through emotion contagion, do you know what it is? Are you accurate about the emotions that you pick up from others? If you are accurate, then you can move along in the next four steps of empathy and do something compassionate. If you are not accurate, the empathic train kind of stops right there. And I gave an example that when I think, I tend to frown. And a lot of times people will read my frown and think I'm angry at them. And their empathic accuracy is being fooled by my frowning, if you hear what I'm saying.
I do. So you say that, you know, emotions are a world unto themselves, and you actually call them a language, and that it's helpful to have kind of a rich emotional vocabulary with plenty of words for differing intensities of emotions. And I imagine the best way to get that is to just really read about it, to perhaps take classes. Do you have any recommendations? Like, what if somebody says, I'm actually not really sure how empathically accurate I am?
This was an issue that's been going on for quite a while in people talking to me on Facebook and my website. So a couple of years ago, we all got together, a big international group of people, and we created an emotional vocabulary list that is free on my website. But we take each emotion and break it down into soft presentations of that emotions, the mood state where everybody could tell that emotion is present, and then the intense state of that emotion. So for instance, soft anger might be annoyed, frustrated, displeased, rankled. Intense anger might be hostile, aggressive, spiteful, vicious. We have lots of words. And so as people start working with their emotions, I have them go and look at the vocabulary list. And instead of saying, I'm angry right now, I was like, be more specific. You know, are you antagonized or are you indifferent? What's going on for you?
Oh, that's really helpful. How do they find this on your website? What's your website?
It's CarlaMcLaren.com, and it is, just put in emotional vocabulary in the search field, and it will send you to the page.
And it's spelled K-A-R-L-A-M-C-L-A-R-E-N Laren.
Yes.
So to our audience. So the third one in this helpful list that's really just helping us break down the emotion, the emotions and understanding empathy, is emotion regulation. What do you mean by that?
That is the kicker. Emotion regulation is, I think, the pivot upon which people's, certainly their empathic lives, but also their internal life where it stands. Emotion regulation is your capacity to work with each emotion in turn. So emotion contagion has happened. You're accurate about the emotion. The next step is, do you know how to work with that emotion? So let's say, Mariana, you're angry. I am very empathically accurate about the level of anger that you have, but I didn't learn how to deal with anger when I was little, and I don't know how to do it now. I might just start reacting to your anger, right? I mm-hmm. might want to mm-hmm. shame you, or I might be afraid. Mm-hmm. So instead of being with your emotion, I'm now pulling a whole bunch of emotions down on top of you
right.
and on top of me. So my capacity to empathize with you has gotten twisted in my own problem with regulating and working with anger, right? And so you're going to learn that when you feel angry, you don't come to me because I'm just going to fall apart.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I imagine in intimate relationships, this is a huge problem.
This is massive.
This is what takes us into therapy.
This is massive. So a lot of empathy will end, you know, so my capacity to help you and be available for you ends because I don't know how to work with that emotion. I'm just lost. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to need empathy because I'm in trouble, right? So you're going to have to drop out of your honest emotion and then come and help me. Right. So you're going to have to be empathic because I fell apart.
Right. Yeah. This is where the accuracy really comes into play so that you can begin to understand your own emotions, understand somebody else's, and kind of tease them apart so that, you know, we kind of go into our thinking faculties a bit. Mm-hmm. And not just letting the emotion carry us away. Is that, would you mm-hmm. say that that's accurate?
Yeah, and what's interesting is simply the act of simply naming emotions, which is why the emotional vocabulary list is so important. The act of naming an emotion can calm down your brain and your sort of adrenaline responses. It can sort of give your organism an idea of what's happening. So your organism is all riled up and you say, oh, this is anxiety. And anxiety is telling me I'm not prepared for the future, or do you know what I mean? And so your whole body can go, oh, it's anxiety. I thought I was having a heart attack.
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah.
Great. So I just kind of, before we, you were going to take a break in just a short while, but before I do that, I kind of want us to, I want to give you the floor for a minute and kind of bring these things together, these first three, emotion contagion, empathic accuracy, and emotion regulation, instead of so much breaking them down, but just kind of give people an overview of what these three are and how it is they work together and prepare us for what we'll do in this final segment of the show. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's say that you come to me and your body is sort of downtrodden and your face looks sad and you look at me and you put on a fake smile. I know because we're friends, you're feeling grief and you know that from the way you were raised, grief is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. So I have identified your grief, even though you were hiding it. So you are showing me that you're holding yourself together with sort of a thread of a smile. And so I have identified that, I have felt it along with you, and I have a practice for grief so that I am going to be available for what happens next.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So my preparation as your empathic friend and my capacity to work with emotions means that I'm going to be available no matter what. When I talk about empathy, I know people talk about niceness and friendliness and empaths don't swear. But for me, empathy is, and this I call a muscular empathy, it's that I can be with you when you're feeling any emotion at any level of intensity, and I will not abandon you. That, for me, is what empathy is.
Right. Yeah. And it sounds a lot like love.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really does to me. And, it, you know, as I listen to this, I think about, really about intimate relationships and the work that couples must do to, I mean, it should be really part of the marriage contract in a sense, you know, because not just the fact that you're living under one roof together, but that you've actually committed to one another to be there with each other through thick and thin. And what that really requires is that you develop empathic accuracy, as you'd call it, and then emotion regulation and an ability to love each other well by separating out what's yours and what's mine, and really truly being there for you and the other person being there, you know, for me, as an exchange that makes for a rich marriage, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I was thinking as I was talking about the grief scenario, what is one of the first things people do when they cry in the presence of others? They apologize. Mm. You know, I'm sorry. And that is just a normal thing that comes out of people when they're crying in the presence of others, is that it's not okay to feel that emotion. It's not okay to express it.
Right.
And that's a problem because it's okay to have emotions.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we need to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the last three of those six essential aspects of empathy. So to our listening audience, stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Adoption changes a family forever, for the adopters as well as the adoptees. There are many adjustments that need to be made, from lifestyle to financial, and the personal rewards are unlimited. Listen every week for Your Adoption Coach with Kelly Ellison. We will examine in detail such topics as international and domestic adoption. We will talk with adoption professionals and hear stories about real families adopting. If you've been thinking about adoption or recently began the process, you'll want to tune in to be inspired every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
There are over 140 million products manufactured worldwide. It is impossible to know the ingredients in these products, especially those made overseas. Stan Salat Jr., President and CEO of the HSF Mark and the Counterfeit Mark Alliance, is the host of People to People, working together for your safety. Stan believes in our right to know the type and amount of hazardous materials in consumer products and whether they are counterfeit. Find out how you can protect yourself every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com.
That's BFJRADIO at gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here with Carla McLaren talking about her book, The Art of Empathy, A Complete Guide to Life's Most Essential Skills. So we've been talking about there are six essential aspects of empathy. We're kind of breaking it down so that you get a picture of what this is and what's needed of us to be healthy empaths in the world. So we've covered emotion contagion, empathic accuracy, and emotion regulation. And now the fourth one is perspective taking. You say in your book, skilled empathy helps you take the perspective of others and to imagine what life feels like for them, how they felt, how they or feel, how they approach situations, what their intentions are, and how they'll respond to others and circumstances. It sounds a bit like, it reminds me of that Native American saying, before I judge a man, let me first walk a mile in his moccasins. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about judgment here, but it's that step, that ability to step into another person's shoes. Mm-hmm. Do I have that right?
Yes. And it's a really important pivot as well. So in the situation where I was talking about seeing you in grief that you were hiding with a smile. If I don't take your perspective, I could very much spin us off into a different direction. If I think about how I work with grief, well, here's what you need to do. Here's how you, do you know what I mean? Empathy mm-hmm. can just leave right then.
Right.
Because I'm not taking your perspective.
Right.
And I think a lot of people think that perspective taking is something, you know, magical, that I have to sort of project myself into your body or something. And there's an easier way, which is to ask the other person.
This is great. Yeah.
Here's something simple. Why don't you ask the other person?
So give me a good language for what that question might sound like.
Mm-hmm. So let's say, I always use "it seems" because I don't want to tell a person what their emotions are. I don't want to take over their emotional life. Right. But I might say, Mariana, it seems to me that you're feeling some, I don't know, you're feeling down or a little bit sad, but you're putting on a smile for me. I just want to tell you that if you are feeling sad, it's okay with me. And I would want to talk to you about it if you want to. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Instead of making a lot of decisions about you.
Right.
Or I could say, you know, cheer up, pal. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, the worst.
I could start managing your emotions for you.
Well, the thing that this brings to mind is how often we misread people and then we build a story. And then we move forward from that story, and now we're off on that track. And, you know, we build deep grooves into that story. It's sort of like the misunderstanding, really, in our families of origin and the way siblings see us and the way parents see us, or our lack of capacity to see that a person has changed over time. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just thinking, welcome to the internet. You know, where people get in comment threads and they just start going at each other. And I can just watch the place where they lost each other's perspective and then just went, you know, on what I call the nightmare romp of the id. Mm-hmm. You know, they just go like, you guys, stop it. Being able to take perspective it's a skill, but it's also something where you can just go and ask the person.
Yeah, it's the best thing to do so that you know you're going, you know, you're thinking about this accurately. I know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, how awful it feels to be the person who's been misunderstood, right?
Yeah.
Because we can feel that too. And how do you find your way back from that? Someone has misunderstood something and, you know, it's all unspoken, right? You can't say, I feel like I got that you misunderstood something about what I said, or this might be what you're picking up. Is that true? And
yeah.
It gets complicated and difficult and gnarly.
It really does. And it can spin out of control in just a few sentences, right. You know, and then we're in a whole different world and empathy's gone.
Right. So again, the best thing to do is to understand that that's what you're doing, I guess. You're taking a perspective and to find a way to act. If you're unsure of what you think you saw, or if you'd like to bring the conversation on track in a deeper way, this is the time to ask a question. And really the art here is learning the art of saying that question in a way that's non-threatening or feels as though you're taking over somebody's emotional life.
Right.
Yeah.
And also perspective taking, I just wanted to say that you can develop this skill at any age in your life. And one of the ways to do it is by reading fiction or watching fictional drama. Anything that helps you get into this mind space of another is wonderful. Practice.
Right. Yeah. I think about television, and so often you watch people, you know, they want to create drama, and so what you're learning is how drama plays out.
Yeah.
So I like shows like Parenthood, for example, where, have you seen that show?
No, I haven't.
It's a really good show when I forget all the names of characters of these shows, but you really get to see real emotional stuff happening among people who really care about each other, and they have true conflict, but they really work it through. There is an emotional intelligence among the writers of that show. Yeah, it's a great show to watch. So the fifth one of these six is concern for others. And this takes us into what I alluded to in the first section, which is the action step. And I really would love to talk about this. I'm going to read something that you said and then ask you to comment on it. This is in that section on page 38. When I look at the ways we talk about those who seem to lack empathy, and when I look at what scares people the most, I rest my gaze on concern for others. Think about it. You can be an absolute clod in the empathic realm, taking in too much, being emotionally volatile, overreacting, being clumsy, and emotionally imprecise. But if others know that you care about them, then a great deal of your empathic clumsiness will be forgiven. But if people sense that you don't care about them, oh no, that will shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on this? Tell us about what concern for others is all about.
Concern for others is your ability to show that you care about others. And this is a fascinating aspect of empathy because you can do emotion contagion and be accurate empathically. You can regulate your emotions and take the perspective of another. But if you don't care about them, they won't feel that you're with them.
Right.
Right.
However, I absolutely get it.
You can fake concern. Concern for others is the place where a con artist can get you, right? Because they can do a pretense of concern for you and then sort of get you to do anything they want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I have a problem with people who, not you, because we're having an interview, but when people during the middle of a conversation try to touch my hand and say my name, and I'm thinking, what are you selling, man? You know? Man, what are you selling? You know, when people just suddenly come out with my first name in the middle of a conversation, it's like, are you trying to show that you're concerned about me? And why are you trying to show it? why don't you just do it?
Because we've learned in the world all these skills that books and classes will tell us are that salesmen use to develop rapport.
Yes, and salesmen learn to fake concern for others.
Right.
That's how that works. And the really good ones, for instance, Bernie Madoff. People were horrified because he was the nicest guy in the world, right? And he was actually operating as a kind of unempathic person. He had to be, because what he was doing was so awful.
Right.
But he made people feel that they were important, right, and that everything was being done for them. And this didn't send up, you know, flares in people's minds.
Right.
Right.
They
just
went
really
right
good.
Along with it. It was really good. It was really good. Yeah. Yeah. So you can't really fake concern for others. People will pick it up, and our work, I mean, concern for others, are, you know, if you find yourself as a person who doesn't have concern, let's say you notice that you sort of really kind of are more apathetic than empathetic. Mm-hmm. So how do we shift that? How do we develop that?
Mm-hmm. I think when I look at problems with concern for others, and you can certainly fake it. I mean, we get fake concern for others every day in stores, you know, when we go in to buy our dog food, right? And the people are like, oh, what kind of dog is it? As if they even care. But when I look at problems and concern for others, I'm usually looking back at early childhood development, where something went awry in the development of empathy in this person. Or they could be experiencing intense emotion contagion, and their lack of concern for others is just a sign of hyperempathy that is unregulated. Mm-hmm. So if people really don't care about others, I would have them look at the six aspects and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
See what's going on in each of the four before concern for others, and see if there's anything in there that needs to be sort of manipulated and worked with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. So the final one of these six is perceptive engagement. You write, it's just as empathic to laugh and joke with someone as it is to offer them a shoulder to cry on. Can you explain what this perceptive engagement is?
Now, the first five aspects, I took the phrases from the research literature. This one I veered off from the research literature. This aspect would be called consolation or targeted helping in the research literature. And I didn't agree that you're always going to be consoling or helping. Sometimes the most empathic thing to do is nothing. So let's say that you came into me with a grieving body but a smiling face, and I realized what was going on, and I took your perspective, I did all of my work, and in my concern for others, I noticed that as soon as I said what's going on, you stiffened up, right, and you put even a bigger smile on. Well, this tells me immediately is it's not time for you to go into that sadness. You need to pull yourself together. So my engagement with you would be not consoling you, right?
Right.
It might even be ignoring you.
Right, right,
like,
right.
Okay, I got to go. That's the phone. Ciao.
Yeah, we would say the most loving thing to do. Right? Right, the most empathic thing to do.
The most empathic thing to do sometimes is nothing.
Right, absolutely.
And I think that gets in people's way, because people think, I'm empathic, therefore I must help everyone all the time.
Right.
And I call it like a runaway healer, you know, an empath going downhill with no brakes.
Yeah,
it's like, let me fix you.
Right.
And a lot of times people don't need that. They need privacy.
So that goes back to the sentence I said. It's just as empathic to laugh and joke with someone as it is to offer them a shoulder to cry on.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of this, I forget what the phrase was, the helping, what was the phrase in the literature?
Consolation and targeted helping.
Yeah, right. So it makes sense that it isn't always just helping, that maybe it's laughing or maybe it's doing nothing. But being perceptive really allows you to be perceptive, to be accurately perceptive, and respond in a way that is welcomed and helpful and, received well, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've spoken of, if you're walking down the street and you see a man trip on the sidewalk. He doesn't fall down, but he trips. And he immediately whips his head around to see if anybody saw him, right? Then what the empathic approach is to immediately look away and pretend you didn't see him.
Right.
Right? Because he's telling you that the shame of being seen is more painful than whatever happened to his foot. Right.
Exactly. So, I'd love to wrap this one up by having you tell us about the wonderful experiment Allison Gopnik at UC Berkeley did, because I think that illustrates this so beautifully.
Oh, that's a wonderful experiment. In this experiment, it's the famous broccoli and goldfish experiment. She took children, I think under the age of two, and put them, there was a bowl of broccoli in front of them, raw broccoli, and a bowl of goldfish crackers. And to be honest, there were a few children who thought the broccoli was food, but most of them didn't. So what they did in this experiment was the experimenter came in and without a lot of words, mimed just this yummy, yummy love for the raw broccoli and mimed that the goldfish crackers were disgusting. Most of the children thought that the broccoli was weird and the goldfish crackers were delicious. And after miming this, the experimenter put out her hand and said, "May I have one?" without looking at either bowl. And what happened was some of the children gave the experimenter a goldfish cracker because that's what the person should eat. Come on, that other stuff isn't even food. And the difference that was happening here is that the children were being generous by giving the goldfish cracker, but they weren't being empathic because it wasn't what the person had asked for. And I think that's such an important distinction because a lot of times we'll give someone a goldfish cracker because it's delicious. Why wouldn't you want it?
Right. Right. But it's delicious by my definition, yeah. Not by yours. That's
yeah,
right.
So, oh, yeah, so you know, if you're feeling grief, I know what would work for me.
Right. That's
but
exactly
that's not,
right.
I'm not you.
That's not real empathy. And we've run out of time for the show, and I wanted you to tell that story at the end because it so illustrates really what we're trying to do by becoming empathically intelligent in a sense. We sense what it is that we're feeling, we sense what it is that others are feeling, and we respond appropriately, whether it's compassion to ourselves, compassion to another, and do it in a way that brings us all closer to ourselves and one another.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I'm really grateful for your taking time to meet with us today, Carla. It was a great interview.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Yes. To our listening audience, Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization, and as such, we could use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.